There is trouble in paradise. The government parties have fallen out with each other.
Now, we're only a year and a half in government.
In
terms of this arrangement.
There's constant charge against me. Spin because he has no case against us when it comes to subs.
5-9.
My charge against him is he's obsessed with innuendo and conspiracy theories.
It's not good enough to just pass the buck. There is something rotten in the state of Denmark, and ultimately somebody has to bear responsibility.
Yeah, we're in the Houses of Parliament on national television.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Your Politics. We're also live on Facebook and Twitter. And with us, and thank you very much for joining us, Ruth Coppinger, the Solidarity TD for Dublin West. Also from our own political team, editor David Murphy and Micheál Lehane. Ruth, let's start with you and let's go back to that stormy exchange in the Dáil last week when you took on Noel Grealish over his question to the Taoiseach about remittances abroad. Why did you insist on saying you'd shout down racists? Why? What were you about there?
Right, well, I wasn't expecting his intervention in the first place. I had gone down to particularly raise about the boil water notice and those issues on behalf of people in Dublin, Kildare, etc. So as I started hearing him speak, I thought, you know, this is kind of heading in a very dangerous direction. But then when he particularly towards the end raised about asking the Taoiseach and the state to investigate the legality of this, that just really set me off. And I thought that this has to be called out. So I jumped up, I asked the Count Corla to intervene. And I did decide, I wouldn't often, people have a right to speak, but to heckle him down, because I felt it was important to register some form of protest. Because I know that there's migrant workers in this country. My own experience is this, I'm in Dublin West, probably the most ethnically diverse place in the country. 1 in 4 people would be born outside Ireland, and 1 in 3 people now would actually have a connection, a parent or somebody who was born outside. So we have a very mixed, and people have been living together for 15 to 18 years. Most people would have come here in the early noughties. It sort of annoys me when I hear asylum seekers and refugees being the focal point, by the way, because people came here in the boom to do work, possibly that many people didn't want to do. Working in the hospitals, working in care homes. A lot of Nigerian women work as carers, actually, in elderly homes that I know. I have a Nigerian neighbour, next door neighbour, drives a bus for Dublin Bus. Taxi drivers, you know, they're doing jobs here. And the idea that they're somehow doing something wrong, and probably something a lot of people don't know, is a lot of Nigerians are becoming homeless. And migrants are becoming disproportionately homeless, believe it or not, in Dublin West, because it makes sense. If you think you're stuck in the private rented sector, you don't have a sofa or a network of support. So actually, a lot of people are suffering because of the recession and the economic policies here. And rather than this divide and divisive thing that Noel Grealish was doing and that others are doing, I felt needed to be called out.
Matty McGrath and a number of the other independents were very cross with you for using that term racist. They said, we're just asking questions. And I've referred to this a couple of times, Vox Pops in Noel Grealish's constituency, where people say he's just asking questions. Isn't it better that these things are raised in the Dáil?
Well, we all choose to ask questions for a reason. You know, I don't ask questions about everything. The questions I choose are for a particular purpose. I'm exactly the same with Noel Grealish. He chose to ask a question. I don't think remittances leaving the country is the biggest problem that we face in this country. In fact, I think actually untapped and untaxed wealth from multinationals is a serious issue that's not discussed enough in this country. We all know about Apple and all of the others. So it's not that he has a problem with that. He has a problem with particular people, and he identified one ethnic group, which I think was really bad, because if you're black, if you're a Muslim, you're marked out even more and more susceptible to experience racism. And I know that for a fact. And he was making life more difficult for people. So this thing about only asking questions, it's a coward's defence. And we found out the next day that actually he'd got an answer to his question before, and he chose not to use the accurate information for that answer. So he was doing it for a reason. And I think we all know the reason.
It's just interesting to see that the whole issue of race has suddenly bubbled up really in the past 12 months in quite a big way. But when you look at the figures, behind immigration in Ireland, and you look at the figures for the number of people seeking asylum, they're way down from where they were around the year 2000, 2001, 2002, when they were up around 12,000 people per annum. They're now around 4,000 people per annum. And of those 4,000, if you look at the figures for 2019, only about 7% of those were from Nigeria. So it raises questions about, like, why are people actually bringing up the issue of one group when that group is quite small? And also the second question it all raises is, why are people talking about this now? This has been going on really for quite some time. And in fact, the figures are much, much lower than they were.
But also the issues of race and discrimination and the way we talk about groups, that's not new, the travellers would say.
Yeah. I there's a few myths that I do hear a lot, and I think we should challenge them, because I don't think it's a new thing to have racism in politics in Ireland. It would have been the case against travellers, and it would have been the case when people did first come here in the early. I do remember particular TDs. But you're right, it is increasing. There's no question of that. And I think there's a few reasons. I think there's national factors. I think there's international factors. I think the coming to power of people like Trump, who legitimises and makes it safer now to be prejudiced.
So there's been a kind of a coarsening of the political language internationally.
Yeah, and I think the particular issue with the EU and migration isn't something that has really happened before when you think about it, because the EU used to have a more open policy, and the EU took a position to have a, you know, a fortress-like policy and to keep people out. And I think that actually has given licence to people to say no, you know. Mm-hmm. So actually, establishment politicians, there's an idea that they're somehow neutral on this. They're not, actually. They've added to it with the policies that have been adopted. But also, when you have a housing crisis, I mean, I made the point talking to you before, a perfect storm's building up here, because there's a serious housing crisis that is not being dealt with, despite what the government says. It's hitting areas like, you know, urban areas. Mm-hmm. It's hitting everyone, but particular areas. And then these are made easy scapegoats. And then you have income inequality growing. We have a huge amount of wealth in Ireland, and it has increased, but it's increased at the top. And, you know, we had the figures with the highest number of high net worth individuals, sorry, as they're called. So the idea that there isn't money to build houses and that we can't provide for people or we can't have health services is incorrect, and it's leading to a scapegoating of migrants. And I think that those are the reasons. And I also think Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, like the idea that, sure, they can't even control their by-election candidates, they're spouting racism on a daily basis. I would have seen parties...
And apologising, just for the record.
Yeah. But I mean, would you not sit down with a candidate running for an election and go through some really basic things? What's your position on migrants? What's your position on racism? The fact that they are incapable of actually vetting a candidate in a by-election, or, you know, what was your view 10 years ago when you were on our national executive? So they're not actually, it isn't just the independents. There's less control over them. You know, they can say what they like because they don't have to answer to the much criticised party whip, you know, actually does have some discipline on people.
How this has all been playing out in the by-elections, Micheál, how do you read what's been happening?
Yeah, well, I think politicians in elections, or politicians in an election cycle, which you're seeing in here generally, say things primarily because there is a vote out there to be got from that. I mean, Noel Grealish, some people would say they would have a suspicion what happened and what he said in Galway during the summer at that meeting, that he possibly got a better reaction than he expected when that was recorded on a mobile phone. And then he took that entire issue to a way more formal setting in here and hasn't said anything since to back away.
And he's
from
welcome
that.
To join us on Your Politics any week. He wants to talk about all of this, by the way.
And then it continues on into the by-election campaign. And it is extraordinary. And Ruth's point is the key one there. How someone who is running under the Fine Gael flag can, over the course of three interviews last weekend, that no alarm bell goes off as to maybe this doesn't tally with party policy, that somehow what they were saying wasn't at odds with what Fine Gael thought, and that it was something that was deemed in Verona Murphy's head at that particular point legitimate for the course of a by-election campaign. Of course, she did since apologise and retract. And but there was criticism too of these efforts by the Department of Justice in helping her to visit that direct provision centre last Monday night, in the sense that, are you using people in a vulnerable situation there to rehabilitate a candidate? But for whatever reason, somehow it's become acceptable. And Verona Murphy definitely at this point last week thought it was unacceptable to say those kinds of things. And that's extraordinary, because it isn't too long ago that would have deemed to be totally inappropriate. And even if you could go back to 1999, when you were looking at the first direct provision centres going into rural areas, the kind of criticism that was raised by some politicians then was not of the same order at all as what's being said on the floor of the Dáil now and said in election campaigns. And that's amazing.
I think the one interesting thing about this is that the first place we kind of saw this really taking effect in the election campaign was in the recent presidential campaign, where, you know, we'd Peter Casey taking a position on the traveller community. And I was speaking to one member of Fianna Fáil during the week, and they made the point to me that that campaign was slightly different because Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael weren't in the campaign, and they were in the way they might normally be in other campaigns. And so some of the discourse was swamped by a particular candidate, and you didn't have the kind of normal activity which might have prevented the likes of Peter Casey getting such a large vote. We'll have to see what happens in this by-election situation. It's a completely different kettle of fish. But and we'll have to see what the electorate thinks of all of this. You know, will these candidates suffer because of what's happened? But definitely there is a sense, I think, in Leinster House, I think there's a sense in the media as well, that something has shifted on its axis. Many people thought that Ireland was a country where this kind of these kind of comments weren't made by politicians, that somehow we were slightly different. But you know what? I think maybe what we've learned over the past few weeks is we're just the same as anywhere else.
What does all of this augur in terms of a general election? Because there will be a general election at some point next year. But you know, what's been the kind of remarks we've heard exchanged in the Dáil, and also the bitterness in the exchanges, I suppose, between Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar. I mean, one of them is likely to be coming back as Taoiseach.
Yeah. I think we've a very complex political situation actually right now that you could spend a lot of time analysing, including people on the left. I think one of the major problems that we have is that there isn't a force that's there that's representing, for example, working class people who do feel alienated and really hit by the fact that there is a serious housing crisis, by the fact that there's a serious health crisis.
Force, what do you mean?
No, well, obviously the left is quite weak in Ireland. And it does mean that if you don't have a left that intervenes, that points to the reason, in my opinion, why we have this situation is because of massive wealth inequality and capitalism is going through a certain phase now where it but won't it, build is, council
is
houses.
It, is it weak because it's fragmented? I mean, that's the argument that's put forward, that you've got all sorts of different versions of left out there. And that, in fact, if there was one stronger, cohesive group that was of a left-wing view within the Irish Parliament.
Well, there'd certainly be more punch at the ballot box for a start. I mean, more people exactly. would get elected.
Yeah. Well, that you see, that doesn't just come out of nowhere, though, unfortunately. It will arise from political events that happen. Obviously, a lot of us would have liked if the water charges, you know, and repeal and big issues like that that mobilised thousands of people had led to something much more significant than actually did happen. But I think it's probably because they weren't long enough in duration, you know, that they were quite short-lived things. But the reality of it is you often hear people saying this, but even if all of the, you know, left and socialist TDs came out of the Dáil holding hands, we'd still be very small, you know.
But you're not holding hands. And there's been, you know, there's the split with Paul Murphy. And I was just interested, and I want to talk a bit about this, because I haven't heard you talk about it. And there's, okay, so you were complained to London and it was for having petty bourgeois attitudes, was it, over the marriage, the abortion referendum?
Well, first of all, just very quickly on, I mean, the reason that Solidarity and People for Profit set up the parliamentary arrangement before the last election was precisely to give, you know, a united, you know, weight to people. And I think we have tried to do that in the Dáil, and that's still maintained. And obviously, we'd like to increase our representation. In terms of the debate and the split, obviously, look, it's unfortunate. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody would argue otherwise. But
what was it about?
Okay, well, a debate took place within the Socialist Party in Ireland and with the, you know, international movement that we're affiliated to. And as I just said, actually, a minute ago, it's a very complex political period that we're in globally, you know. So there's issues that we were discussing, like new movements that are taking place that are not in the traditional formats. So one of the biggest movements actually globally, and I've talked to you about this, Anya, before, is women are arriving on the political scene actually internationally in a way that was never the case before. So there's huge gender, you know, movements, usually around violence, like Latin America, you've Neo-Nomenos movement. And in many other countries, Spain, for example, there's been millions of people around.
And was that seen as being too petty bourgeois, that, you know, you were getting distracted by feminism instead of the greater socialist cause?
Well, in Ireland, and we had repeal, right, because women's issues in Ireland are huge issues because of the traditional role of the Catholic Church, etc. So one of the debates was, you know, how do you intervene with a socialist programme to those movements? Because obviously they're not just working class people, there's many other people involved. And some people had a suspicion and a fear around that. It's not one that I share, because what we were trying to do was bring a socialist feminist pole to that movement, you know, in repeal and in other things. And in relation to, look at the climate movement, we've 12-year-olds bunking off school to try to do something about the environment. Now, to me, these are really positive things because what's missing, though, is the traditional force, the trade union movement. The leadership of the trade unions has been completely silent on these really important questions.
And is there a danger that there are strands in socialism and left thinking that are kind of missing these kind of currents in the 21st century? That, you know, that they're too hidebound by old ideologies? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Socialist Party in Ireland have intervened into them and, in fact, played a leading role in the whole fight over 5 years. Like we would have set up, obviously, I won my seat in 2014 and I made abortion as big an issue as I could. It, using my Dáil position, but also outside the Dáil, we set up ROSA, which was an anti-capitalist kind of force and took up on the ground the issue of abortion pills. And so we were consciously, you know, intervening into that movement because if you're a socialist, you want to be relevant to any political development that's taken place. And those are the key ones right now. Unfortunately, like if you look at young people bunking off school, but it should be workers that are actually taking strike action, like against demanding action on climate change. It's a workers' issue as well. And the trade union leadership really should, you know, come out of its slumber and give a lead. And I think that's a key thing that's missing for the growth of the left and a challenge to racism.
Yeah, I just think one interesting thing about it is that if you look at the way Irish politics is constructed, and Micheál knows way more about this than I do, you know, you've got two big parties which are centre-right. And then elsewhere, you've just got such a fragmented scene where there are many people who hold similar views and similar policies on things, all belonging to different groupings, and they're all vying to get the same pool of votes. So I just wonder if that's part of the issue, that that's why you don't have the kind of I suppose in business they call it efficiencies of scale. It's not quite like that, but you don't actually have that kind of powerhouse that is enabling you to get your message right to hoover up all those votes.
Yeah, but it does seem extraordinary too, doesn't it, at this point in the lifetime of this government that you have parties like Sinn Féin going into four electoral tests next week who don't look to be in the running to take any of those seats, and that there's a fair possibility that the main parties support, well, facilitating the government party could win two of them, the government party itself could win one. And for all the difficulties and the massive crisis that there is in relation to housing and health, if that is the electoral return next week, well, that does raise some questions about the effectiveness of the opposition in the 32nd Dáil.
There's, I mean, for example, in the local elections, which I would have canvassed in myself, and we were just talking about this in relation to the by-elections, it's actually quite difficult because people either now don't answer doors. It's actually a real change in the situation. Like, I would have canvassed in elections over 20 years and less people open their doors in the evening. And it's a sign of just disenchantment or lack of interest or alienation or demoralisation or whatever. And then as the left, we have to persuade the people least likely to vote to vote. You know, so it's a real problem.
But is there also a tide thing compared with, say, the last election and the water charges? Was there a sense of that at the locals maybe, and a concern about that in relation to the general?
You don't have one big single issue like you would have had in, say, 2014. Like the water charges and austerity was writ large, whereas now there has been a recovery in the economy. Nobody would deny that. Now, it's completely unequal in its effect on people. But, there's no question that there's huge issues there like housing. But you see, people look at housing and they see nothing happening, nothing changing. And it's a real, like in the areas most affected where you've got a grandchild and somebody staying in the house, 3-4 generations, people are very demoralised.
It's just interesting though, your argument that this is simply down to, shall we say, the way capitalism works and where the capital is in Irish society. Like other people would look at the same problem and say, well, look, you know, a lot of the builders went bust. Then a lot of the people who lend the money to the builders, they also went bust. Mm. A lot of the people who built homes, they left the country. And all of those factors combined with the state pulling back from building public housing while the private sector went into a contraction over a long period of years, it's the after effect of all of that that is still playing out. And simply saying, you know, taking a large amount of money from one sector of society, giving it to another sector of society, it's not quite as simple as that.
Well, when you say after effects, though, this housing crisis has been here for 5 to 6 years in particular.
Yeah.
If you had, in my view, a left government that really cared and was committed to resolving it, we have the state land. We have the council has loads of land in every single community where this is impacting. And we do have the money and the resources. But the problem is there's an ideological aversion now.
When do you think, well, how long do you think it's going to be before we have the general election where all of these propositions and arguments can be tested? How long after the by-elections do you see this thaw lasting? I mean, what's the atmosphere like in here? Because our sense is that, you know, it's definitely, people are thinking about the doorsteps more than about what's happening in the Dáil chamber.
Obviously, I'm a TD only 5 years, but I'd say in comparison to the last Dáil, this is much less exciting. Actually, in the sense that it's because of the arrangement you're up against Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. So, you know what I mean? There's whereas in the last Dáil, Labour was a focus.
So do TDs like you feel nervous about the talk of a general election? Does it feel like, turkey's a Christmas, like you're up for the chop? Is there a general sense of nervousness when people say, oh, how do you feel about a general election?
There's
a general
election around the corner. Of course there is. Well, if you take my area, I'm up against them in the Taoiseach's constituency. It's a four-seater. You've got new political forces like the Greens. Mm. So absolutely, I'm going to be fighting for my seat. No question about it. And
does that keep you awake at night?
Well, I've tried not to let it keep me awake at night. So we have to take positive measures about it and bring home to people the importance of having a socialist voice in the Dáil. Mm. And a voice for workers and for women and for also oppressed people. So we are taking measures, but it is going to be tough and we're not taking that for granted. So do we like elections? I actually don't mind them. I don't mind knocking on doors and talking to people at all. Prefer to do it in the spring rather than in cold winter's nights.
Well, they're all dancing around about the date. What do you think it's going to be?
It's very hard to see this lasting till May because it seems to be Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael can't stand the sight of each other or don't even, you know, deal with each other in the way that they would have in the past. That's what a few of them have said, particularly frustration on housing, I think. But it could go into the spring and allow whatever government is set up in the UK to bed down, see if some sort of a deal can be hammered out. Mm. They obviously, Fine Gael would like to go with something positive from Brexit to cover over the other issues that they may have. So possibly Easter or spring.
There's that question, isn't there? I mean, everything that has happened or so much of it was unexpected, cobbling this administration together, keeping it on the tracks for so long when it looked destined to fall off at so many times. So for all those reasons, just looking at the form line, the possibility at least of an agreed date perhaps is something that could happen, given that everything we thought up to now that has surprised us, that there is a possibility at least of that. And the Fianna Fáil line on that is that Easter is the natural cut-off point, and then that could allow you possibly to have an election in the early days of May if an agreement was struck.
If an agreement was struck. Ruth Coppinger, thanks a million for joining us on Your Politics. Thanks for listening and watching. Thanks to Jack Good on production. And don't forget, you can subscribe and leave a review. We'll talk to you again next week.